In the Northern Hemisphere, December is a month of short days until the Yuletide rolls in and the solstice marks the coming of more light. December festivities abound as cultures intermingle. We'll share some history and amusing stories from our archives about Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa, which all fall within the same week this year. So stay with us for New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela. Christmas and Kwanzaa always technically start on the same days of December, the 25th for the 12 days of Christmas and the 26th for the 7 days of Kwanzaa. But the 8 days of Hanukkah begin on the 25th day of the Hebrew month of Kislev, which is based on a lunar calendar, so that's why it's always shifting. Though this Jewish holiday is often paired with Christmas, and light is an important symbol for both, the late Rabbi Gerald Kane reminds us that the two celebrations actually have little in common.
Hanukkah represents the victory of a small band of Jews, the Maccabees, over the Syrians who were attempting to destroy them and make them assimilate. So in many ways, it is a celebration of religious freedom. But because it is not written about in the Pentateuch, in the Torah, the central body of Jewish law, it is not a significant Jewish holiday. It's an important Jewish holiday, but it's that juxtaposition of Hanukkah and Christmas that people will say, oh, Hanukkah is the Jewish Christmas. Well, it really isn't.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the story that we have coming up with Grace Paley. And you suggested that we get this story. Why? I mean, what's the importance of this particular story?
Well, I was introduced to The Loudest Voice when I was a student at the University of Buffalo. And I remember reading it and laughing out loud because it resonated with a story that my own mother told me. I would guess, having spoken with Grace Paley about it, that it typifies a certain generation of American Jews. Jews who came over from Europe. My mother came over from Lodz, Poland, settled in Paterson, New Jersey. And at Christmas time, the teacher asked everyone in the class, is there anyone in here who doesn't have a Christmas tree? So my mother, of course, raised her hand. And the teacher said, well, you're such a good student. The last day of school, I'm going to give you our little tree that I have in the room. And my mother brought the tree home as a reward from this teacher. And my grandparents were apoplectic. They were trying to maintain their Judaism. And here my mother walks in the house with a Christmas tree. And in many ways, it was like giving the little girl in the story the role of the narrator who is baby Jesus. So in many ways, I identified with it. And I think Grace Paley's gift for capturing the dialogue and bringing us the perspective of this little girl listening to these adults, not fully understanding them, really makes the piece a literary gem.
The late Rabbi Gerald Kane recorded in 1997 when he was with Temple B'nai Yehuda in Kansas City before he left for Las Cruces, New Mexico, where he remained at Temple Beth El until his retirement in 2007. We discovered that he passed away there in 2015, but Rabbi Kane will live on here at New Letters on the Air for inspiring us to get the now late poet and short story writer Grace Paley into Vermont Public Radio's studio to make her only recording of the widely anthologized story that he loves so much. Here's Grace Paley from 1998.
The Loudest Voice. There is a certain place where dumbwaiters boom, doors slam, dishes crash. Every window is a mother's mouth, bidding the street shut up. Go skate somewhere else, come home. My voice is the loudest. There, my own mother is still as full of breathing as me, and the grocer stands up to speak to her. Mrs. Abramowitz, he says, people should not be afraid of their children. Ah, Mr. Bialik, my mother replies, if you say to her or her father, shh, they say, in the grave it will be quiet. From Coney Island to the cemetery, says my papa, it's the same subway, it's the same fare. I am right next to the pickle barrel. My pinky is making tiny whirlpools in the brine. I stop a moment to announce, Campbell's tomato soup, Campbell's vegetable beef soup, Campbell's scotch broth. Be quiet, the grocer says, the labels are coming off. Please, Shirley, be a little quiet, my mother begs me. In that place, the whole street groans, "Be quiet, be quiet," but steals from the happy chorus of my inside self not a tittle or a jot. There too, but just around the corner, is a red brick building that has been old for many years. Every morning, the children stand before it in double lines, which must be straight. They are not insulted. They are waiting anyway. I am usually among them. I am, in fact, the first, since I begin with A. One cold morning, the monitor tapped me on the shoulder. "Go to room 409, Shirley Abramowitz," he said. I did as I was told. I went in a hurry up a down staircase to room 409, which contained sixth graders. I had to wait at the desk without wiggling until Mr. Hilton, their teacher, had time to speak. After 5 minutes, he said, "Shirley?" "What?" I whispered. He said, "My, my, Shirley Abramowitz, they told me you had a particularly loud, clear voice and read with lots of expression. Could that be true?" "Oh, yes," I whispered. "In that case, don't be silly. I might very well be a teacher someday. Speak up, speak up." "Yes," I shouted. "More like it," he said. "Now, Shirley, can you put a ribbon in your hair or a bobby pin? It's too messy." "Yes," I bawled. "Now, now, calm down," he turned to the class. "Children, not a sound. Open at page 39, read till 52. When you finish, start again." He looked me over once more. "Now, Shirley, you know, I suppose, that Christmas is coming. We are preparing a beautiful play. Most of the parts have been given out, but I still need a child with a strong voice, lots of stamina. Do you know what stamina is?" "You do, smart kid. You know, I heard you read 'The Lord is my shepherd' in assembly yesterday. I was very impressed. Wonderful delivery. Mrs. Jordan, your teacher, speaks highly of you. Now listen to me, Shirley Abramowitz. If you want to take the part and be in the play, repeat after me. I swear to work harder than I ever did before." I looked to heaven and said at once, "Oh, I swear." I kissed my pinky and looked at God. "That is an actor's life, my dear," he explained, "like a soldier's, never tardy or disobedient to his general, the director. Everything he said, absolutely everything, will depend on you." That afternoon, all over the building, children scraped and scrubbed the turkeys and the sheaves of corn off the schoolroom windows. Goodbye, Thanksgiving. The next morning, a monitor brought red paper and green paper from the office. We made new shapes and hung them on the walls and glued them to the doors. The teachers became happier and happier. Their heads were ringing like the bells of childhood. My best friend, Evie, was prone to evil, but she did not get a single demerit for whispering. We learned Holy Night without an error. "How wonderful," said Miss Glacé, the student teacher, "to think that some of you don't even speak the language." We learned Deck the Halls and Hark the Herald Angels. They weren't ashamed, and we weren't embarrassed. Oh, but when my mother heard about it all, she said to my father, "Misha, you don't know what's going on there. Kramer is the head of the tickets committee." "Who?" asked my father. "Kramer? Oh, yes, an active woman." "Active? Active has to have a reason." "Listen," she said sadly, "I'm surprised to see my neighbors making tra-la-la for Christmas." My father couldn't think of what to say to that. Then he decided. "You're in America, Clara. You wanted to come here. In Palestine, the Arabs would be eating you alive. Europe, you had pogroms. Argentina is full of Indians. Here you got Christmas. Some joke, huh?" "Very funny, Misha. What is becoming of you? If we came to a new country a long time ago to run away from tyrants, and instead we fall into a creeping pogrom, then our children learn a lot of lies, so what's the joke?" "Ah, Misha, your idealism is going away. So is your sense of humor." "That I never had, but idealism you had a lot of." "I'm the same Misha Abramowitz. I didn't change an iota. Ask anyone." "Only ask me," says my mama. May she rest in peace. I got the answer. Meanwhile, the neighbors had to think of what to say, too. Marty's father said, "You know, he has a very important part, my boy." "Mine also," said Mr. Sauerfeld. "Not my boy," said Mrs. Klieg. "I said to him, no, the answer is no. When I say no, I mean no." The rabbi's wife said, "It's disgusting." But no one listened to her. Under the narrow sky of God's great wisdom, she wore a strawberry blonde wig. Every day was noisy and full of experience. I was right-hand man. Mr. Hilton said, How could I get along without you, Shirley? He said, your mother and father ought to get down on their knees every night and thank God that they have a child like you. He also said, you're absolutely a pleasure to work with, my dear, dear child. Sometimes he said, for God's sakes, what did I do with the script? Shirley, find it, Shirley. Then I answered quietly, here it is, Mr. Hilton. Once in a while, when he was tired, very tired, he would cry out, Shirley, I'm just tired of screaming at those kids. Will you tell Ira Pushkov not to come in till Lester points to that star the second time? Then I roared, Ira Pushkov, what's the matter with you, dope? Mr. Hilton told you 5 times already, don't come in till Lester points to that star the second time. Ah, Clara, my father asked, what does she do there till 6 o'clock? She can't even put the plates on the table. Christmas, said my mother coldly. Ha, ha, my father said, Christmas. What's the harm? After all, history teaches everyone. We learn from reading this is a holiday from pagan times. Also, candles, lights, even like Hanukkah. So we learn it's not altogether Christian. So if they think it's a private holiday, they're only ignorant, not patriotic. What belongs to history belongs to all men. You want to go back to the Middle Ages? Is it better to shave your head with a second-hand razor? Does it hurt Shirley to learn to speak up? It does not. So maybe someday she won't live between the kitchen and the shop. She's not a fool. I thank you, Papa, for your kindness. It is true about me. To this day, I am foolish, but I am not a fool. That night, my father kissed me and said, with great interest in my career, Shirley, tomorrow's your big day. Congrats. Save it, my mother said. Then she shut all the windows in order to prevent tonsillitis. In the morning, it snowed. On the street corner, a tree had been decorated for us by a kind city administration. In order to miss its chilly shadow, our neighbors walked 3 blocks east to buy a loaf of bread. The butcher pulled down black window shades to keep the colored lights from shining on his chickens. Not me, oh, not me. On the way to school, with both my hands, I tossed it a kiss of tolerance. Poor thing. It was a stranger in Egypt.
You're listening to Grace Paley reading The Loudest Voice here on New Letters on the Air.
I walked straight into the auditorium past the staring children. Go ahead, Shirley, said the monitors. 4 boys, big for their age, had already started work as prop men and stagehands. Mr. Hilton was very nervous. He was not even happy. Whatever he started to say ended in a sideward look of sadness. He sat slumped in the middle of the first row and asked me to help Miss Glacé. I did this, although she thought my voice too resonant and said, show off. Parents began to arrive long before we were ready. They wanted to make a good impression. From among the yards of drapes, I peeked out at the audience. I saw my embarrassed mother. Ira, Lester, and Meyer were pasted to their beards by Miss Glacé. She almost forgot to thread the star on its wire, but I reminded her. I coughed a few times to clear my throat. Miss Glacé looked around and saw that everyone was in costume and online waiting to play his part. She whispered, all right. Then Jackie Sauerfeld, the prettiest boy in first grade, parted the curtains with his skinny elbow and in a high voice sang out, parents dear, we are here to make a Christmas play in time. It we give in narrative and illustrate with pantomime. He disappeared. My voice burst immediately from the wings to the great shock of Ira, Lester, and Meyer, who were waiting for it but were surprised all the same. I remember the house where I was born. Miss Glacé yanked the curtain open, and there it was, the house, an old hayloft, where Celia Cornblue lay in the straw with Cindy Lou, her favorite doll. Ira, Lester, and Meyer moved slowly from the wings toward her, sometimes pointing to a moving star and sometimes ahead to Cindy Lou. It was a long story, and it was a sad story. I carefully pronounced all the words about my lonesome childhood, while little Eddie Brownstein wandered upstage and down with his shepherd's stick looking for sheep. I brought up lonesomeness again and not being understood at all except by some women everybody hated. Eddie was too small for that, and Mardi Gras took his place wearing his father's prayer shawl. I announced 12 friends and half the boys in the fourth grade gathered around Marty, who stood on an orange crate while my voice harangued. Sorrowful and loud, I declaimed about love and God and man, but because of the terrible deceit of A.B. Stock, We came suddenly to a famous moment. Marty, whose remembering tongue I was, waited at the foot of the cross. He stared desperately at the audience. I groaned, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The soldiers, who were sheiks, grabbed poor Marty to pin him up to die. But he wrenched free, turned again to the audience, and spread his arms aloft to show despair and the end. I murmured at the top of my voice, the rest is silence, but as everyone in this room, in this city, in this world now knows, I shall have life eternal. That night, Miss Kornbluh visited our kitchen for a glass of tea. So how's the Virgin? Asked my father with a look of concern. For a man with a daughter, you got a fresh mouth, Abramovich. Here, said my father kindly, have some lemon. It'll sweeten your disposition. Then they debated a little in Yiddish, then fell in a puddle of Russian and Polish. What I understood next was my father, who said, still in all, it was certainly a beautiful affair, you have to admit, introducing us to the beliefs of a different culture. Well, yes, said Mrs. Kornbluh. The only thing, you know Charlie Turner, that cute boy in Celia's class, a couple others? They got very small parts, or no part at all, in very bad taste, it seemed to me. After all, it's their religion. Ah, explained my mother. What could Mr. Hilton do? They got very small voices. After all, why should they holler? The English language they know from the beginning by heart. They're blonde like angels. You think it's so important they should get in the play? Christmas, the whole piece of goods, they own it. I listened and listened until I couldn't listen anymore. Too sleepy, I climbed out of bed and kneeled. I made a little church of my hands and said, Hear, O Israel. Then I called out in Yiddish, please, good night, good night, shh. My father said, shh, yourself, and slammed the kitchen door. I was happy. I fell asleep at once. I had prayed for everybody, my talking family, cousins far away, passers-by, and all the lonesome Christians. I expected to be heard. My voice was certainly the loudest.
The late Grace Paley, back in 1998, reading her short story, The Loudest Voice, from her first collection published in 1959, The Little Disturbances of Man, a book that's never gone out of print. You can hear interviews and more readings of fiction and poetry by Grace Paley on our website, newletters.org. Providing another unusual cultural perspective on Christmas, here's Priscilla Kogan with an excerpt from her first novel, Winona's Web, winner of the 1997 Small Press Book Award. In the book, a psychologist learns many things from her patient, Winona Pathfinder, a Lakota Sioux medicine woman who shares the importance of the giveaway time.
Winona was, as usual, my last appointment of the day, and I was tired. Perhaps my head was still recuperating. Winona, on the other hand, was bustling with energy. She talked at great length of all the Christmas gifts she was making for her grandchildren. For her granddaughter, she had beaded hair ties, earrings, and moccasins, which she herself had made out of elk skin. Out of a fox skin, she had fashioned a dancing outfit for her grandson, with the nose and eye holes of the fox, to fit right over the top of his head. Winona said he'll be the best-looking dancer at the powwow next summer. She had also created a staff out of turkey feathers and red trade cloth for the boy to carry into the dancing arena. She had spent hours positioning the head of a hawk atop the staff to face forward, to help the boy step in the right direction. I could see that Christmas delighted her. I asked her about that. Well, of course, it's the one time of the year we Indians can understand your holidays. It's the giveaway time. Winona's face lit up with anticipation. I was curious. What do you think of the birth of Jesus and the meaning of Christmas? I love it, she exclaimed. I love the whole story of it. Babies and wise men, stars and the animals. Jesus was right there in the center of it all. What I can't understand is why people, good Christians, don't believe in the stars anymore. They forget the animals and act as if the only ones concerned with the birth are the two-leggeds. Jesus was born in a manger. His brothers and sisters shared their food bin with him. It's a wonderful story. I was taken aback by her enthusiasm. Do you think it is a true story, Winona? Of course it's true, she answered with a simple smile. Although nothing I have learned was ever really simple with Winona. Well, then, do you see yourself as a Christian? She seemed to expect that question. I'm a pipe carrier for my people. Ours is the way of this land. The land of Jesus was dry, stony, desert country. His is the story from that place. Ours is the way of the Buffalo people. The black robes came to my people and told them the stories of Jesus. We said, they were fine stories. Now let us tell you our stories. We said, let us tell you how this turtle continent was made, how fire came to the Buffalo people, the lessons of the coyote. We said, let us tell you of the pipe and the seven ceremonies brought to us by white buffalo calf woman. But they were rude people, these black robes. They wanted us to hear only their stories. They told us to throw our stories away, to tell only their stories. They said their stories were the true stories. And then the elders knew how foolish these black robes were, for no one story could tell it all. And all stories are true.
Priscilla Cogan, reading from her novel Winona's Web, the first in a trilogy about Winona, published by Two Canoes Press. Our next story is certainly true. It's a Kwanzaa tale for the holiday founded on the African first fruits harvest. It's celebrated from December 26th to January 1st, as detailed in the book Kwanzaa, a Celebration of Family, Community, and Culture by Dr. Milana Karenga. Back in 1997, then professor and chair of the Department of Black Studies at California State University in Long Beach, Dr. Karenga described how Kwanzaa emerged from the civil rights movement.
I created the holiday in 1966, and I did it in the context of the movement. I'm an activist scholar, and what we were doing in the 60s was asking ourselves, how can we enrich our lives, and how can we bring the path forward so that we can use it as a foundation to frame and pursue an enriched and expanded present and future. And our arguments were that we should go back and recover and reconstruct the best of African culture, its best values, its special cultural truth that it speaks to the world, and make that a fundamental part of our life today. I created and put together the seven principles in Guzo Sava as a core value system by which we would reaffirm identity, purpose, and direction, and which would stress and celebrate and reinforce family, community, and culture.
Well, I was wondering if you would tell us Happy Kwanzaa in Swahili.
Yes, it's Heri za Kwanzaa, and Heri means all the good in life, beauty, good, prosperity, and a good future. So Heri za Kwanzaa is how we say Happy Kwanzaa.
Dr. Milana Karenga is still celebrating the 7 days of Kwanzaa in California, encouraging everyone to pay attention to the Nguza Saba, that's Swahili for seven principles: unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith, as in this next story by Milton Gray. He was a substance abuse counselor back in 1997 who found creative release as an interior decorator and storyteller. Here's his Kwanzaa tale that taught him to pay attention to the quietest voice.
I've entitled this story, The Danger of Greed. I'm an interior decorator, and I primarily do window treatments like top treatments, swags, and cascades, and cornice boards, and draperies, and mini blinds, vertical blinds. And someone had told me about this dope dealer who wanted some window treatments. And initially, I thought to myself, Milton, don't you involve yourself with shady characters. But then I allowed greed to intercede. And I said to myself, well, just this one time. So I went over for the appointment, and these people lived in a third floor apartment and had this big view window. And they wanted me to dress the window up. So I put swags and cascades up, tiebacks with draperies, and mini blinds. They were all mauve in color. Oh, and they just loved this window treatment. And a matter of fact, it was gorgeous. So about 3 weeks later, I got word that they wanted another window treatment for another window in this third floor apartment. And again, that quiet, still voice tried to intercede and say, "Milton, don't involve yourself with those shady characters." But once more, greed took over. I rushed over to this third floor apartment, and I went up and I rang the doorbell. And the young lady there and her husband came to the door. And they told me the window treatment that they wanted, and I was taking the dimensions of the window, and another ring came at the door. And the gentleman came through, and I recognized him. I knew him as a criminal, as a killer. But the police didn't know about it, but people on the streets knew about it. Again, that quiet, still voice tried to intervene. "Milton, you need to get your things together and get out of this place right now." But then again, greed interceded. "Finish the job, Milton. Get the money and go." All of a sudden, I heard all of this arguing in the back bedroom. And then I heard two gunshots go off. Boom, boom. I recognized the caliber as a .357. Now I'm ready to leave. I pack up my things. I rush towards the door. The killer came out in the hallway, says, "Come back into the bedroom." The first thing that entered my mind, I must try to negotiate. "Hey, listen, man, I don't know anything. I haven't seen anything. I haven't heard anything. Come back in the bedroom." "Hey, listen, I had made a determination many years ago. Never go in a room where you just heard some shooting, and don't let anyone put you in the trunk of a car." Then the gentleman aimed that gun towards me and pulled the trigger, boom, and it hit my right earlobe. And that beautiful window treatment, that third floor one, I rushed to that window and bloom, out the window I went and crashed in a yard next door. And an old lady came out after hearing that loud clash, and she saw me there in her yard, and she looked up there where that window was, and looked down at me on the ground in a yard, wrapped up in swags and cascades and mini blinds. And I says, "Ma'am, would you please call me an ambulance?" And they rushed me to St. Mary's Hospital. I had a broken neck, broken back, collarbone, wrist, ankle, and leg. The moral of the story, don't let greed take your life. The end.
Milton Gray's Kwanzaa story demonstrating collective work and responsibility to the community. Gray now works as a storyteller for the Mid-Continent Public Library and Young Audiences Incorporated here in Kansas City, where he also runs an upholstery business with his son and volunteers at the Salvation Army. For links to the books and people featured in our December festivities, go to newletters.org. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. And if you like what we do, consider donating via the Support New Letters tab in the top right corner of our website. Again, that's newletters.org. From New Letters Magazine at UMKC, today's show was originally produced with Laura Spencer and Margaret Smith and updated by Jamie Walsh, with music by the Eastern Watershed Klezmer Quartet and Kevin McLeod. I'm Angela Elam. Happy holidays from New Letters on the Air.